ॐ मुकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घायति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। ऐ सल्यूट् कृष्ण दि एम्बॉडीमेंट ऑफ सुप्रीम ब्लिस थ्रू हूज ग्रेस द लेम स्केल माउंटेन एंड द डम बिकम इलोक्वेंट। मे कृष्ण बी द गाइड ऑफ आवर लाइफ। ओम शांति शांति शांति। पीस पीस पीस। भगवद गीता चैप्टर 10 द डिवाइन मैनिफेस्टेशंस। In this chapter, Krishna was trying to tell Arjuna that he exists in everything, in every being. Wherever you find any extraordinary, remember that is my splendor. This portion I already told you from, I think, nearly 24 verses, Krishna tried to tell Arjuna that God is in everything, is in every being. If you hear from me that I exist here and here and here, it will help your meditation. You see, the goal of Vedantic experience is see God in everything. Wherever your eyes fall, that is God. But we don't see it because our minds are not tinged with God color. So Krishna wanted to give a spiritual coating on Arjuna's mind so that he can see God in everything. You see, if your eyes are affected with jaundice, you will see everything yellow. Similarly, if you experience God, if you see God, if you realize God in this life, you will see God in everything. I remember one of my friends once made a comment, I find Krishna is a most egotistic person. I am this, I am that, I. 10th chapter is full of I. So, one yogi came with, a devotee came with a book. I think a modern yogi wrote that book and gave to my friend. And my friend took that book and he counted 2 pages and found 18 I. Then he went to his room and brought the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and said, here is a 1163 pages book. Find out how many times Sri Ramakrishna said I and my. So it is a very funny expression that where there is ego, there is no God. But Krishna himself is God. He is trying to tell Arjuna that this I, which I am talking to you, is not Krishna. It is Supreme Brahman, the ultimate reality, who took this human form with a view to bestow compassion, mercy on human beings. These verses sometimes very difficult to explain to the Western audience, because you do not know the background of these words. In the beginning, it came to my mind that perhaps till from the next 24 verses, I simply read and tell you the translation, and I shall mention, well, it is not necessary to understand everything. Then I thought, no, let me try to explain these words to you, so that you can have some glimpse of their spiritual tradition. Verse 24. Purodhasam cha mukhyam mam vidhi partha brihaspatim senani maham skandaha sarasam asmi sagaraha a priest sau partha know me to be the chief brihaspati of generals. I am skanda of reservoirs of water. I am the ocean. Among the priests, Purohit, the person who prays, who wishes welfare of all beings of the city is called Purohit. Pura, Pura means city. Hit means who he seeks welfare of the city is called Purohit, priest. So among the priests, I am Brihaspati, the priest of gods. He is the guru of the gods. Whenever the gods are in trouble, they go to Brihaspati for counseling. So Krishna says, as you see Brihaspati, I am that Brihaspati. Means my consciousness pervades in him. My consciousness is in him. With the help of that consciousness, he admonishes. He gives counseling. He prays. He meditates. He functions. Sinanim aham skandaha. Skanda. Sinanim means among the warriors, generals, I am a skanda. Means Kartikeya. Son of Shiva and Parvati. Now I'll have to tell you what is this, the function of a skanda. Once upon a time there was a war between the gods and the demons. The gods are banished and the demon Tripurasura occupied heaven, health, heaven, earth and the nether world. And the gods, you see, when demoniacal nature prevails, the divine nature subsides. So all over the world was turmoil, full of turmoil, because the demoniacal nature was prevalent. So the gods went to the great god Vishnu for solution. He said, if there is any son of Shiva, he will be capable to kill that demon. So all gods went to Shiva and requested him to get married. Who will answer? He was in deep samadhi. He did not answer. So they engaged Parvati, the beautiful daughter of the mountain Himalayas, to tempt Shiva. She failed. Oh, there is a beautiful epic poem on this Kartikeya, which was written by a medieval Sanskrit poet Kalidasa. Every day Parvati would go to Shiva and offer flowers, put garland around his neck, besmeared his forehead with sandal paste, offer food to him, but that great god was immersed in deep meditation. He would not look at her. Kalidasa made a remark, Chetamsi na vikriyante yesham chetamsi taiva dhiraha. Who is the steady person in this world? He who is surrounded by temptations but is never tempted. He is a steady person because he has tremendous self-control. So is Shiva. He has tremendous self-control. That beautiful girl in a solitary place could not create any kind of agitation in his mind. So Kalidasa made a remark, he is dhiraha. He is the most steady person. Gradually, Parvati failed to get married Shiva. So what she did? She started to practice meditation and austerity. In course of, and you see, through spiritual way, she wanted to marry Shiva. One day Shiva could not stay in meditation because he felt that somebody was thinking of him. So he came in disguise of a Brahmin and told Parvati, who was practicing austerity in the Himalayas, why are you practicing so hard? You are a princess. You should live in luxury, not in this hard life. Even you have stopped eating food. You eat only the dry leaves. So her one name is Aparna. And Parvati said that I want Shiva as my husband. Don't marry Shiva. He's a crazy fellow. He's the god of demons and ghosts and hobgoblins. He lives in cremation ground, besmeared with ashes. Shiva, you see, Shiva in disguise, Brahmin, was trying to tell everything bad of Shiva. Then Parvati said, I don't like to hear any criticism about my beloved. You get out from this place. Immediately that Brahmin took the form of Shiva and he married Shiva. From their marriage, this boy was born, who was Kartika, the god of power, strength. Because he was not born out of lust. He was born out of self-control of Shiva. And he conquered the demon and established gods in heaven. You see, behind these mythological stories, there is a deep meaning that I shall try to tell you some places in this Bhagavad Gita. Sarasam Osmi Sagarah. I am the ocean among the reservoirs. Krishna says he is the ocean. When the Lord is represented as sleeping on the cosmic ocean, it is not just the sea outside. He is also reclining on the sea inside. You see, according to Vedantic tradition, the microcosm and the macrocosm are built in the same pattern. You will not have to see world outside. The whole universe is within your heart, in the mind. Eknath made a beautiful comment on the ocean. In one sense, this is cosmic consciousness, but even on the physical level, it can be illustrated as well. The same type of salt solution that was in the sea eons ago, bathing and nourishing the first cells when life began, is in our body fluids today. The oceans cover 70% of the Earth's surface. And this same kind of fluid makes up almost 70% of human body. It is not too far-fetched to say that we have a little of the sea flowing in all of us, giving sustenance to the millions of cells which compose our bodies. That ocean is within us. Next verse. Maharshinam bhriguraham giram asmi ekaksharam ekam aksharam yajnanam javayugyosmi sthavaranam himalayah. Of the great rishis I am Bhrigu, and of the words I am the monosyllable, Om. Of sacrifices I am the sacrifice of Japa. Of immovable things I am the Himalaya. Among the sages, Maharshi, in Sanskrit, these three words we sometimes commonly use, Maharshi, Devarshi, Rajarshi. Maharshi, Rishi means seers of truth. The person who has direct experience of God, he is called Rishi. He sees the mantras, he sees the vision, forms of gods and goddesses. He is called Rishi. Every mantra has three parts. Agni Devata, Gayatri Chanda, Vishwamitra Rishi, Agni Devata, Gayatri Chanda. And this mantra, Vishwamitra, the sage Vishwamitra is the seer, the meter, and the deity who has been eulogized by that mantra. These three things are invariably found in the Vedas. Anyhow, Maharshi, Devarshi. Devarshi means he is Devata, he is God, at the same time he is a seer of truth. For example, Narada, Rajarshi, he is Raja, king, at the same time he is an illumined soul. For example, Janaka. If you read Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, you will find this Janaka was asking questions to the great sage Yajnavalkya. There was a beautiful debate in the court of that Janaka. He was an illumined soul. Anyhow, here we find Krishna says, Maharshinam Bhriguraham. Among the Maharshi, among the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Why is he great? Because of his excellence of knowledge. He was a very powerful sage. He wanted to test who was great, who was the greatest among the gods. First he went to Brahma, the Hindu trinity, Brahma the creator, Vishnu the preserver, and Shiva, Rudra, the destroyer. This is the trinity of Hinduism. Just like your Christian trinity, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost. Bhrigu went to Brahma and criticized Brahma and did not pay any respect to Brahma, the creator. As a result, he was very mad at Bhrigu. Said, you are my son, I am your creator, and you criticize me? Bhrigu left the place. Then he went to Shiva. There also he criticized Shiva and his work, his activities, and he did not pay any respect to Shiva. Shiva was mad at him. Immediately he left the home of Shiva. Then he went to Vishnu. He saw Vishnu was sleeping. And he straight went and kicked on his chest. Vishnu, the great God, got up and said, "Oh, you have come. I am sorry that I was sleeping, that I could not receive you. But I feel very bad that perhaps you kicked me, perhaps your leg got some, you are hurt. Perhaps your foot got some pain. Please forgive me. I want to serve you." Then Bhrigu said, "Now I understand who is the greatest. You have humility. So you are the greatest." Then Vishnu said, "Out of respect, I love you, I respect you. So henceforth, I shall keep the footprint of yours on my chest." So still, they say that Vishnu's chest, you will find the footprint of this great sage Bhrigu. Just see, behind this mythological story, you will find that who becomes great in this world? The person who has humility. He is loved by people. He is the most popular person in the society and the family, who is humble. You see, the Hindus, through these colorful stories, preserve their heritage. Bhrigurāham, Giram Asmi Ekam Aksharam. Among the sounds, I am that monosyllabic word, Om. I shall read that footnote of Om to you, because Om represents Brahman. Om is the most sacred word of the Vedas, and may be compared to the word referred to by St. John in the opening of the fourth gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. According to Hindu philosophy, the whole of this universe has both name and form as the prerequisites of its manifestation. The form is its outer crust, of which the name or idea is the inner essence or kernel. The name is inseparable from a word or sound. The universe perceived by the five senses is the form, behind which stands the eternal inexpressible sphota or word or logos. This eternal sphota, the essential, beginningless material of all ideas or names, is the power through which the Lord creates the universe. Nay, the Lord first becomes conditioned as the sphota by his own maya, and then evolves himself as the more concrete sense-perceived universe. The symbol of the sphota is Om, also written A-U-M, Aum. Since the word is inseparable from the idea, Om and the eternal sphota are inseparable. Therefore, the eternal Om is the mother or source of all names and forms, hence the holiest of all holy words. There may be other words to denote the eternal and inexpressible sphota, but the Hindus contend that Om is a unique word and uniquely apposite. The sphota is the material or foundation of all sounds or words which are inseparable from names or ideas. Yet it is not any definite, fully formed word. That is to say, if all the peculiarities that distinguish one word from another be removed, then what remains will be the sphota or Om. Therefore, Om is called the Nada Brahman or Sound Brahman. The three letters A, U and M, pronounced in combination as Om, are the generalized symbol of all possible sounds. A is the root sound, the key pronounced without the tongues touching any part of the plate, palate. It is the least differentiated of all sounds. Again, all articulate sounds are produced in the space between the root of the tongue and the lips. The throat sound is A, and M is the last sound. U represents the rolling forward of the impulse that begins at the root of the tongue and ends at the lips. If properly pronounced, Om will represent the whole gamut of sound production. And no other word can do this. Therefore, Om is the fetus symbol of this photo, the logos, the word which are at the beginning. And this Om represents your waking state, dream state, sleep state. This Om represents your gross body, subtle body, and causal body. Etad devaksharam param, etad devaksharam sreshtam, etad alammanam gatva, brahmaloki mahiyate. There are some mantras in the Kathopanishad where we find the eulogy of this monosyllabic word Om. Hold this Om, this sound. The sound will take you a place which is soundless. You see, Brahman is both with sound, without sound. Nirgun Brahman is without sound. Let me give an example. You will understand this thing better. Watch is a sound. Let us throw away all watches into the ocean. Perhaps there is no watch visible in this world. We have just tried all of them. But the knowledge of a watch will remain. You cannot destroy the knowledge. Again, that knowledge will produce watch, though there is no watch in this universe. So this creation comes from the knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of God. All these sounds are there. Innumerable sounds, innumerable ideas are in the mind of the creator. And whatever he will utter, that thing will happen. Because his life is established in truth. Even a sage who practices truthfulness for 14, 12 years, whatever he will say, that thing will happen. It's a feeling, these sages, holy people, you know, whatever they say, that thing will happen. Because if their lives are established in truth, Sri Ramakrishna said, the Divine Mother never put any untruth on my lips. With the gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, it's truth and truth alone. Giramaspi ekaksharam. Jajnanam japa yajnamaspi. Among the sacrifices, I am the japa sacrifice. Yajna means sacrifice. Devarti. When we offer something to the gods, that is called yajna. According to Hindu tradition, the human being is born with five debts. Each human being. First is deva yajna. When we are indebted to God. God gives us food, sunshine, rain, water, so fire. So we must offer something to the gods. They call it deva yajna. Rishi yajna, sacrifice to the sages. They illumined our minds, our intellect through their wisdom and knowledge. So we are indebted to them. We must sacrifice something to them. We must serve them. Deva yajna, Rishi yajna. Then Pitri yajna, ancestors. They gave us these physical bodies, so we must offer something to them. Then Nri yajna. Sacrifice to human beings, our neighbors, other human beings, they help us. Then Bhuta yajna, sacrifice to the animals, feed the cows, the dogs, cats, the other animals, because they are also helping us. So in this way, Hindu's life is based on sacrifice. That man is great whose sacrifice is the greatest. Christ, Buddha, Krishna, Ramakrishna. They are great because they sacrificed maximum. The greatness of a human being depends upon his sacrifice. In the society, who is the top man in the society? The person who has sacrificed. Otherwise, everybody is busy with wife and children and family and husband. Who thinks about others? Who loves others? Who serves others? The person who serves others, loves others, feels for others, that person is great. Because he's unselfish. And that unselfishness brings expansion of the heart, and that is called life. Contraction is called death. Jagya, a person becomes free from evil through sacrifice. Krishna says, among this sacrifice, you see, jagya, sacrifice, brings purification of the heart. When the heart becomes purified, it gets the reflection of God. It sees God. Krishna says, Jagyanam japa jagyasmi. Among the sacrifices, I am the japa, the best sacrifice. The best way to purify the mind is japa. Repeat the mantra. If Lord wills, I shall in near future, I shall give a lecture on the science of japa. It is a very big subject. Many of us repeat mantra, but many of us do not know the science. Of course, we got the instruction from our teachers and we follow what he said. If you follow that thing, you will be illumined, no doubt. But you know, I also got instruction from my teacher, but I wanted to see more about this mystery of japa. Different, last time when I was in India, I interviewed different holy people who are in this line. The japa is their main discipline, some Vaishnavites. They say japa siddhi. Perfection comes through repetition of mantra. Tantric school, they stress on japa. Vedanta school stresses on meditation. Through meditation, you will be able to transcend. Of course, we teach japam also, but we do not stress japam as we do in meditation in the Vedantic tradition. But anyhow, how the sound, repetition of mantra is nothing but the vibration of the sound. Japam, of course, of three kinds. Verbal, you can hear. Some, they call it upangshu. Only lips move. But sound, only you can perhaps hear a little. It will not reach others. Another is manas japa, mental japa. So, whatever you repeat or you may not repeat, the vibration comes. That sound vibrates. Sound counteracts sound. It is a science. Suppose I am repeating my mantra and you started jazz music, you know, very powerful, high volume. The whole building will pervade that powerful sound. Yeah? Just the sound subdues the sound. Bad sound, bad vibration can be subdued by good sound, good vibration. That is the function of japa. Then the period comes when the sound does not move. It merges into soundless space. Vayu, akashe, lina, the air merges into the cosmic space. And this space merges into the Atman. Mantra chid rashmi maya, this mantra is full of light. Swami Vivekananda had an experience. Today I saw my mantra written in golden letters. That mantra is luminous, full of light. The tantric aspirant repeats mantra on the six chakras of Kundalini. You see, they repeat 10 times on each chakra and visualize the opening of the chakra. It is a mysterious phenomenon. Anyhow, in future I shall tell you about this japa. May your life be a constant sacrifice. That is the way a person becomes great. Sacrifice. Jagyanam japo jagyasmi brahmarpanam brahmahavi. We repeat that mantra before our meals. What does it mean? the person who thinks everything is sacrificed to God, my every action is sacrificed to God, that person becomes illumined. His mind is always connected with God. Sthavaranam Himalaya, among the mountains, I am the Himalaya. Hima means snow. Alaya means abode, the abode of snow. It is true, when I was in Mayavati, I used to watch that perpetual snow range. 400 miles from our monastery, we can see. It is nearly 72, 75 miles interior of the Himalayas. From there, Tibet is very close. So from the monastery, from my room, I used to watch. You know, there are glass windows. Dhawalgiri, Nanda Devi, Trishul. Mount Everest cannot be visible from the monastery. From Nepal up to, I do not know, there is a big map in our monastery with that we will pinpoint those mountains. 24,000 feet, 26,000 feet, 28,000 feet, all these mountains. Their snow never melts, perpetual snow range. Dazzling white. You know, if you go there, you will not have to meditate. Nature will meditate for you. You won't get any restlessness. If you want to see the face of a human being, you will have to walk 5 miles. We used to tease this. We are in the dining table, every day we'll have to see the same face, again and again, same face. Beautiful place, beautiful. Swamiji once said in California, a lady came to Swamiji and said, Swamiji, let us go for sightseeing. Madam, sightseeing? I have seen the Himalayas. I will not have to go and see any place in this world. Because the panoramic beauty of the Himalayas really is something. When I was coming to St. Louis, a devotee bought a book, The Himalayas, $100. Pictorial book on the Himalayas. I have a copy. A Japanese stayed in the Himalayas for 4 years and took all those pictures in all seasons and published that book. It's a fantastic book. Anyhow, Sthavaranam Himalaya, among of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Imagine a nice comment about the Himalayas. Most of us do not even suspect the height to which we can rise through the practice of meditation. On the walls of the Capitol in Sacramento is a line of poetry which I like very much. Give me men to match my mountains. It makes me proud to remember that in India, where we have the highest and the most majestic mountains in the world, there has been an unbroken tradition of spiritual giants, men and women, of such tremendous stature that they tower as high above you and me as the Himalayas above the plains below. That is why the last line of this verse sounds so sweet to me. To my partial eyes, I don't think there is any symbol of spiritual awareness more beautiful than the Himalayas, the home of perpetual snow, higher than which no human being can climb. Here Sri Krishna is reminding us that there is a mighty Himalayas inside us too, the Himalayas of consciousness. When you begin meditating, you enter the foothills, and as your meditation deepens, you climb higher and higher. Finally, you reach the top of one of the lower peaks. But there is no time to sit down and congratulate yourself. Another peak is already beckoning to you, saying, come and conquer me. This is the challenge of meditation. Your legs are aching and your oxygen supply is exhausted. You have been waiting for the chance to sit down for a rest. But you just cannot be satisfied with anything less than the highest. So you start climbing again, hoping there will be a chance to build a little shack when you get to the top. But no sooner do you reach the summit than you see an even more magnificent mountain already ahead of you. then you realize that you have only been warming up. The real challenges are just beginning. This is putting restlessness to work. Show me someone who is restless, and I can help that person harness his or her restlessness in climbing the vast Himalayan ranges of consciousness, where the peaks never end. Even if after years and years of climbing, you finally reach Mount Krishna or Mount Christ or Mount Buddha, you will see that there is no way to conquer these heights in the span of one human life. And even if it were possible to stand at the summit of these vast peaks, you would still be standing only at the foot of the highest of all mountains, Mount Brahman, lost completely beyond the universe. He made a beautiful comment connecting with these Himalayas. You know, in 1977, when I went to that Kedar Budri and Amarnath, when I used to, you know, walk on the bank of the river, Parasanda, Alokananda, Mandakini, and from there the mountain range, you know, 21,000 feet. Some places are straight, so high, and seeing myself, I used to compare, you know, I am like a tiny little ant or a particle of sand compared to the vast mountain. You won't never feel that, you know, I am great, I am big. That Himalayas will humble your ego. In the Himalayas, many holy people practice their austerities, disciplines. Very calm, quiet place. Cold. You can breathe fresh air. You can feel it, that you are breathing beautiful, some kind of freshness of the eternal. You can feel it. And in Kashmir, in one place, I have never seen the sky could be so blue. Blue! I have never seen such clean space sky in my life as I saw in the Himalayas. Some places in Northern California, when we passed through Sierra Mountain, some areas are also panoramic, beautiful. Sthavaranam Himalaya. Next verse. Ashvattha sarva vrikshanam devurshinam chanarada gandharvanam chitraratha siddhanam kopilo munihi. Of all trees, I am the Ashvattha. And of the devurshis, I am Narada. Of the Gandharva, I am Chitraratha. And of the perfected ones, I am the sage Kopila. Krishna is describing to Arjuna all the greatest manifestations of Godhead among the mountains, among the Himalayas, among the trees, among the space, among the, you know, about everything. He was trying, I am that, I am that. I am the Ashvattha, the great banyan tree. Whereas if Krishna would come to America, he would say, I am the redwood tree. Last summer, I went to that Muir forest in the Northern California to see. Of course, I saw it once before. Then I told one monk that, you know, I have nothing to do. Drive me. Let me go and see the Muir forest, that huge, long, this redwood tree. I took some pictures also. Krishna said, we shall read in the 15th chapter about the tree. This peak of an imperishable Ashvattha tree, with its root above and branches below, its leaves are the Vedas, and he who knows it knows the Vedas. Above and below spread its branches, nourished by the gunas. Sense objects are its buds, and its clustering roots spread downward in the world of men, giving rise to action. Its true form is not comprehended here, nor its end, nor its origin, nor even its existence. Having cut down this firm-rooted Ashvattha, with the strong acts of detachment, one should pray, I take refuge in that primal being from whom has streamed forth this external activity, and seek that goal from which they who have reached it never return. This Ashwatthama, the great banyan tree. I think I have seen one of the biggest banyan trees in the world. I think that is the biggest banyan tree. It is in Botanical Garden, Calcutta. Nobody knows where is its main root. It is quarter mile diameter. One tree. I used to live very close to that Botanical Garden. Ashwattha Sharva, Devarshi Namcha Narada, among the Devarshi. I told you, Deva means God, Rishi means sage. And he has both qualities. He is God as well as sage. He is Narada. Narada is a great sage, an illumined soul, a great devotee of Lord Krishna. He wrote the bhakti aphorisms, Narada's way of divine love. Bhakti aphorisms, 84 aphorisms he wrote to narrate devotion, divine love for God. In the beginning of his life, he started 64 items of learning, 64 branches of learning. And after reading all these books and all these sciences, he went to Sanat Kumara, an illumined soul, and said to him, Aham Shochami, I am submerged in grief. Why? I read too much, but I don't know God. I don't know myself, my Atman, but I have read. What have you read? Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, Kalpa Chanda, Vyakaranam, Jyotisham, Niruktamiti. He gave the list of the books he read, he studied, and said, in spite of all my vast erudition, I am submerged in grief. Help me, so that I can experience my own self. Sanat Kumara gave 22 lessons. And at the end he said, Bhumaiva Sukham Nalpe Sukamasti, Jat Alpam Tad Martyam. That Bhuma is Brahman. That vastness is Brahman. Where there is littleness, that is death. Infinite is Brahman. Where there is limitation, that is death. Transcend limitation. Experience that ultimate reality, the vast Brahman. And he became illumined. In Hindu mythology, we find many stories about Narada. Once Narada was very proud of his devotion, so Krishna wanted to give him a lesson. He said, Narada, could you go and check a devotee who lives in the farmhouse? So Narada went there and observed his life, that farmer's life. He got up early in the morning and said, Krishna, and took his plow and the bulls and went to the ground and plowed the whole day, came back in the evening. He took his bath, ate his dinner, and whole day he worked so hard that he felt tired, and he repeated Lord's name another time, Krishna, and went to bed and fell asleep. Narada came and reported to Krishna about that devotee and said, well, Lord, I heard that he repeated your name twice while he got up from his bed and while he went to bed. Oh, all right. Now take this cup of oil and make a circle around the house and then come to me. And Krishna put oil into that cup full to the brim, and he cautioned Narada, please be careful, not a single drop of oil should be spilled. So Narada was very careful. His whole attention was on that oil cup, made 7 rounds and came to Krishna. Krishna said, how many times did you think of me? Not a single time, Lord, because my whole attention was on the oil cup. you asked me that there should not be any, you know, falling of oil. So he said, look, that householder, that farmer has wife, children, family. In spite of that heavy responsibility, he could get chance to get chance of or opportunity to repeat my name twice. And you, for this, you know, petty oil cup, you could not repeat my name only once. In this way, Krishna removed his ego. You see, God does not want that his devotee should be egotistic. Because that ego is the impending, that ego is the greatest impediment in spiritual life. It is just like a big wall which stops the growth of spiritual life. Where there is I, there is no God. Narada. Gandharvanam Chitra Ratha. We have many, according to Hindu tradition, they have Gandharva. Gandharva is not man nor God, in between. They are like angels, of according to Christian, Judeo-Christian or tradition. Just like angels. So I am Chitra Ratha. He was a very powerful Gandharva who gave power to Arjuna. Chakshushi Vidya. Arjuna can know what is in others' mind through concentration of truth. He can use his eye and can mesmerize others. Arjuna got that power from this Gandharva. Anyhow. Siddhanam Kopilo Muni. Among the perfected souls, I am Kopila. In Bhagavata Purana, there is a long story about Kopila. He was the son of Devahuti and Kardama. I wrote an article about this sage 15-16 years ago. It was published in the Prabuddha Bharata. A blessed son gives illumines the mother's heart. Something like that, I forgot the title. And his mother came to him and said, I am afraid of death. You are my son. You are illumined. Remove that fear of death from my mind. So Kopila gave knowledge to his mother and his mother became illumined. He is the founder of Shankha philosophy, the first organized philosophy in this whole world. He first wrote 22 aphorisms. They call it Shankha Prabhochana Sutra and formulated the theoretical aspect of yoga system of Patanjali. You see, Patanjali wrote the yoga aphorisms, which is based, whose philosophy is in Shankha. So Shankha is the theoretical aspect of yoga. And Patanjali described the practical aspect of yoga. This Kopila has a disciple named Asuri. One day he went to him and said, Asuri, how are you? I am fine, master. I am happy with my home, wife, children. Kopila left. You see, Kopila was thinking that I am now old. I am supposed to depart from this world very soon. Before I leave this world, I must give this knowledge to a disciple who will transmit this knowledge to the next generation. But he could not get the right disciple. So after 10 years, Kopila came and asked, Asuri, how are you? I am fine, master. I am quite happy. Again he left. After 10 years, again he came and asked, Asuri, how are you? Oof! Burning! Family life is burning. Master, I am disgusted with this world. Please, take me with you. Asuri, please come. This is the right time for me to give you my knowledge. Because you have attachment to this world, you cannot carry my message. I am just waiting for this right moment. Now I shall empower you. I shall give you my Shankha philosophy. And you distribute it among others. So Asuri was taught by Kopila. There are many stories about Kopila. Kopila is a muni, great sage. Very calm, quiet, illumined. Siddhanam Kopilo Muni. In this verse, Kopila is called Muni, the silent one. what is meant here is not silence of the tongue, but silence of the ego. For the sages who have forever silenced their self-will, this is a perfect name. After many years of meditation, when you have risen above body consciousness and your ego has been dissolved, you will have gone beyond the words of the inspirational passage. Then you will find yourself on the very seabed of consciousness, where everything is still. This stillness is the greatest source of joy. For the cacophony of self-will is the cause of all our suffering in life. The mind is completely still, so there can be no anger, no greed, and no fear. I wanted to cover two more verses, but time is over. All right, if you wish, you can ask me questions. Rishi and Muni. That is a good question. They are all more or less synonymous words. Rishi, Muni means, you know, still perhaps it is very difficult to differentiate. Through the words I can make some sense. Look, Muni word comes from the mind. The person whose mind is calm, he is Muni. Still mind, tranquil mind. The person who has tranquil, serene, calm mind, he is called Muni. He has no desire, no doubt. He is a Muni. And Rishi. Rishi means the experiencer. Rishi means truth. Experiencer of the truth is called Rishi. And a drashta, seer, who sees Brahman in everything, in every being. He is a Rishi. Well, you see, the Muni, you can say this Muni also, the two outlook. Rishi means externally, you know, he is focusing his knowledge in the external world, in the macrocosm. And the Muni, who is focusing his attention in the microcosm, that is the way we can differentiate. Rishati. Muni is also a teacher. Kopil Muni, he is a teacher. There is a place in the called Ganga Sagar. The confluence between the Ganges and the Bay of Bengal, there is a hermitage. That is, there is a ashram of Kopil Muni. There he practices austerity. Call it Kopil Muni's ashram. Those are all more or less synonymous words. But in Sanskrit, there are so many meanings. Om asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrittor ma amritam gamaya avirabhinma yadhi rudrayate dakshinamukham tinamam pahi nityam om shanti shanti shantihi. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. Light us through and through and guide us evermore with thy loving presence. Peace, peace, peace be unto all.